It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters. Welcome, everybody. Friday. Hoping your week is, like, superb. And I know mine has been. God's been great. We're in the middle of the Lenten season. Glorious time for us believers, particularly as we are looking at the way the world is turning right now. Incredible time. With me today, I've got a very good longtime friend, a pastor friend from New Hope Foursquare Church, literally, I don't know, about 20 minutes away from here. You know, it's Greg Vesley. Greg, New Hope is like positioned right there at the end of urban, and right across the street is rural. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've just got Cordon Road as its boundary. And just to give you listeners a little history here, I first met Pastor Greg in January of 2013. Greg, you just came on staff. I was on council, and you were at your initiation was at my wife's memorial service in January, and we briefly visited. Yeah. And Greg, I just thought, well, it'll be cool to be able to work with you as I had to let the smoke settle in my life. And you came on. Greg, talk about coming up from California and how you got to New Hope and how you became a pastor. And just cliff note version there, Greg.
Yeah.
And then we'll bring on your partner, Travis Rabbi, here after that.
Yeah, definitely. So I started out in Northern California in Grass Valley and came to know the Lord at 16 years old, took my first pastor at 18, and started youth ministry there that just really exploded. And Southern California church down there kind of heard what we were doing because we had like 300 students, a church of 20, and we were seeing 20 to 30 young people come to the Lord for the first time. And it was all God's work, not me. And they heard what was going on, asked me to come down to San Diego to pastor there and to help develop things. And then I got this phone call by a mutual friend of ours, Larry Spousta.
Yeah, Abe's, his father-in-law. Yeah,
the first pastor that started New Hope.
Yeah. And so high school gym.
He says, I have this guy, I know. He didn't tell me that it was his son-in-law.
Right.
That needs some help. Yeah. And you'd be probably a good fit. Why don't you think about moving to Salem? And so I remember thinking, man, from the sunshine to the rain. And I really prayed, and God said, yeah, move there. So I moved. At that time, I had my three little girls, and we just adopted a little girl, Chloe. And so moved our four little girls and Liz and I, and went there. And I remember the first day, 2 days later, the first day actually on staff is where I was introduced to you. It was during a hard time,
yep.
You know, during your wife's memorial service at the time. So,
yeah, it was an incredible time in a lot of ways. And it was gut-wrenching. And at the same time, I realized that God was moving in my life and still is. And, you know, through the course of time, Greg, you moved on and you have a business acumen that also, quite honestly, is married to your ability as a pastor. And so I want to bring on your partner, Travis. Travis Rabbi is with us, right?
Yeah, yeah. My business partner, yeah.
So we're going to get back to all kinds of ministry stuff, but I want Travis to get in on this conversation because, Travis, you're an HVAC tech guy. You put together heat pumps and stuff like that.
I have.
But it's more than that. You've taken it, and you not only understand all of the technical parts of it, but through Greg, you guys are developing a company, and you're a huge part of it. Talk about your life a little bit, kind of as Greg did, and then how you and Greg came together, and talk about what you're doing and where you're going to go. And we've got some time here, Travis. Go for it.
Yeah. So for the last like 12 years, I started as a technician. Well, technically an installer. That's where you start. You start at the bottom, crawling in attics and, you know, getting all sweaty and everything. So that's where I started. And then I had the opportunity to become a technician, and I started learning all these things. And I was like, man, I can't wait to tell everybody everything that I know. But I realized that their eyes would roll in the back of their heads, and communication was such a big part of what we did, right? I ended up getting into the sales side. And then a few years later, I ended up meeting Greg. Still had a lot of that technical knowledge and everything like that. And I was actually training technicians on how to communicate. But my sales weren't doing as well as they could have. So when I met Greg, he actually took me under his wing and he was able to help me out, create a process. Really, I was just riding with him and then recording him without him knowing, to be honest.
You didn't tell him?
I didn't tell him.
How did you guys meet? How'd you guys get together? Was it your church or where were you guys at?
It was actually the same company. We worked for the same company. We were on two different islands of Hawaii, but I had talked to Greg before that, and then we would do like prayer meetings and things like that. So I would talk to Greg through those and got to know him very little. But then when we both moved to Washington, that's when we, you know, got more time together and I got to learn from him.
You know, I so often felt so sorry for Greg to be living in Hawaii when I'd be looking at him on Facebook. I just felt so sorry for him because he was put in such a horrible place. Greg, how did you survive Hawaii?
Hey, I was suffering for Jesus.
It's a whole different... Talk about, you know what, both of you guys, Greg, you first. Talk about... being a Christian in Hawaii, and tell us what islands you guys were on.
Yeah, so just a quick story. When I left New Hope, the Lord kind of had me step out of ministry work, and in a sense, you never step out, right? We still did ministry, and so we decided, we were praying to move to Kauai, and it was pretty crazy because Liz and I had these four little girls. We're on a plane. Yeah. I don't really have a job lined up there, but the Lord said, go. And I remember sitting on the plane thinking to myself, I'm nuts. I'm flying to the most expensive place and very liberal. But the Lord had something in mind. When I moved there on the island, actually, what's kind of funny, I'll pause right there, is Liz said, I cannot move anywhere where there's not pine trees. Guess what's on Kauai? They have pine trees on there.
Okay, big time caveat there.
And so as soon as we're landing the plane, we see the palm trees and then we see the pine trees. And it actually brought me back to a prophecy that was done from Larry, if you remember, way back when, where New Hope, right, the vision of New Hope was he saw the pine trees catch on fire and fling to the palm trees and from the palm trees to the bamboo. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't. I never heard that story.
No, you didn't?
Yeah. No.
So that was a word that was given to Larry. And so when we went there, our whole goal was to help establish things to help pastors that were struggling. And so a friend brought me out there and saw that vision, and that's what we were going to try to put together. But what I didn't realize is that God always has a different plan than what we think, right? A man's heart plans his way, but what? He directs our path.
Correct.
And so right away I realized God was starting to teach me how to be a son, not a pastor.
Okay.
And so, which is a different thing, because my identity was really caught in being a pastor, but he wanted to teach me also what it meant to be a son.
Wow.
And so that's where the adventure began. And so on the island there, yeah, it was really different culture.
Yeah.
Not a great place to raise kids, but it was just a great culture. Everything's slower. It's very expensive. Most people are working multiple jobs to be able to survive there. Politically, everything's very, very strong, you know, in the non-conservative way. And so it was different. I had to adjust quite a bit.
So both of you, Travis, you know, you shared with me earlier, you're 35 years old, you got three children, three gals, and you were there in Hawaii as well.
I was.
What were the biggest challenges? And I don't want to be overly blunt, but what were the struggles for churches there? Was it, I'm going to say it, is it because you're a white guy? Or is there kind of a chasm between the two? Are there any, what were your thoughts about being there, and how long were you there?
So we were actually on the Big Island of Hawaii, right? And that's where the YWAM base is.
Correct.
So we landed February of 2020. So right before COVID, like we had a few weeks there and then everything just shut down.
Yeah.
So to tell you the truth, I don't know what it's like we went to one church service there because everything else got shut down, you know? So what the challenge is there on the island, I really couldn't tell you, but we kind of went there with the thought process like, hey, we're so close to the YWAM base. We're going to meet a lot of cool people. And I'm actually busing them out, getting them to the airport because everything's about to shut down and they may not be able to get a flight out, you know? So... But my wife, actually, her name's Emily, and she's at Starbucks. This is after all that happened. And the barista says, you know, Emily, your order's ready. And this other guy walks up, her name's also Emily, and she's a missionary with YWAM. So they ended up staying behind. So we got really, really close to them. So that was really cool. But, you know, we went to one church service there. And
how many people were in that church?
It was a pretty big church. It was actually called Pine Tree, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, especially in lieu of what we just heard here.
Right. So I would say maybe 70. Wow. But a lot of kids from YWAM were there.
Yeah. Greg, we got less than a minute. You talk about helping pastors in churches. What a couple of the issues, and we'll carry it over if we have to.
Yeah, so a lot of pastors, you know, they don't have really an inner circle, and so they're kind of doing things on their own. And what people don't realize is pastors have the same struggles as everybody else in their congregation. Sometimes they're struggling in their marriage because of the demand in the ministry. I remember at New Hope's doing 70 hours, you know, a week. And so the family aspect, other things that they're struggling with, and they just need someone to listen to them and help carry them through before it becomes a moral failure or before it becomes something bigger.
Got to head it off. Mm-hmm. Jake, Real Matters, visiting with Greg Vesely, pastor, and his partner, Travis. We're going to be right back after this. Hang on.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. Come on in. Can't believe how quickly this year is going. And if anything goes quick, it's this program, because we're just really freaking exciting. That's the way I look at it. With me today, a friend from many years, Greg Vesely, was associate pastor at New Hope, and we still maintain contact with each other for some years. And his partner, Travis Rabbi, still on the Hawaii thing, because it is definitely, how long were you guys there? I mean, how long were you there, and then what made you, you know, and Greg, you go first, and then Travis, take over. You're helping pastors cope. How did that go, and do you feel like you made some traction?
Yeah, it wasn't really exactly what we thought it was going to be. We had this idea where we fly pastors out. What ended up happening is really helping a lot of the pastors that were on the island, you know, on the island of Kauai. And so Kauai is a whole different culture than the other islands, because most of the people are all related to each other that are on the island. And so, like, even during COVID, it was a different experience compared to other islands. But yeah, we were able to just come along some of the pastors and really help them develop some of the things that were that they were doing, you know, on the island. We saw some impact there. But really, what's interesting is, like I was mentioning earlier, is, you know, we have our own plans, and then God has a different plan. And so the plan was really starting to work things in me and teach me some things while they're on the island, while we were also helping others. And during that time, to be able to survive, I went to work for Wyndham Corporation and helped them do sales while we were doing that.
Travis, talk to us about your experience there.
Yeah, so
go for it.
Oh, yeah. So we were there for exactly a year. We went out there to open that branch on that exact island. So, you know, talk about identity. My identity was really tied into, you know, succeeding and doing things. And you get there, everything shuts down, and you don't get to do any of that. And not only is the island life's pretty slow anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, especially coming from Southern California. So,
yeah, you had your time there. So let's go ahead and fast forward a little bit. And you two, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, you guys meet through the same company. And now you guys are working on some stuff. Travis, why don't you start first? Because you're making a big move here real quick this weekend.
Yes, this weekend. It's coming up. But Greg and I are starting to help businesses, specifically small business owners, you know, home services, things of the like. What we found is a lot of the, you know, big private equity groups are coming in, taking over these smaller companies or even medium-sized companies. And they're really, I would say, hurting the culture. And everything's very money-driven, you know. So what we found is by helping lifting up these small business owners who may not necessarily be, you know, very savvy in business. They could be really good technicians, installers. They're really good at their craft or their trade. They may not succeed. They might not be around. The average life is going to be 2 to 3 years for like a home service company to be around.
What's going to separate you from them? What's going to separate you from the ones that only have a 3-year shelf life? What's going to be the difference maker?
That's a good question. One thing that we found is, you know, people over profit. That's the biggest thing. So putting processes in place that really highlight the employees and getting back to service, right? Like everything, Greg and I were talking about this is like, you know, the private equities come in and it's like the owners are about money. The sales team, the technicians are about money. What does the customer become? It comes about money. There's no service anymore. You know, getting back to that old school service, teaching that, the communication, being upfront, you know, transparency is super important. And really, we're just trying to bring trust back to the trades. That's our goal.
Sounds good. Greg, you want to saddle on that a little bit?
Yeah, because what we've seen over the years, so going from the island and doing ministry, you know, diving into business and helping businesses scale, the businesses that we were a part of, we realized that there's a real need to really put the customer first again. And even the salespeople, there's a lot of dishonest sales techniques out there. There's a lot of dishonesty. And what if we just brought confidence back and take care of people first to the consumer? Because it feels like everybody's trying to take advantage of each other. And so what we're doing is helping companies do something that's honest. And that's why we do have the saying that's people over profit. And if you take care of the people, they'll take care of you, right?
You got to make this happen, there's got to be a lot of volume.
Yeah.
You guys have got to be moving a lot of product. How do you do that in a time like we're in right now, particularly here like in Oregon and Washington?
Well, right now, a lot of your home service businesses are struggling because of all the things that are going on in the economy, even with the war that's, you know, just transpired.
2 weeks ago. Almost.
2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You know, people are like scared to spend their money. But in some home services, it's really a need, not a want. You know what I mean?
Sure. You
but
have no choice.
You have no choice for heating and air or roofing if it's leaking, you know, all these different things. And so, but the thing is people are still scared financially. And so what we do is a lot of these companies they don't have a process, you know, to what they're doing. A lot of the owners are working in the business, not on the business.
Okay.
A lot of them aren't really business guys. And so we come alongside and help them be more profitable and sell more honestly and make sure the customer's being taken care of and financially making it affordable.
Yeah, to you, Travis, you could be the greatest HVAC tech person in the world, but there's got to be some business acumen that goes with it, right?
Absolutely.
Talk about some of your experiences and what you've learned being with Greg. And also talk about, in the next couple of minutes, what it's going to be like for you to go back, you know, to Southern California, which is where you are originally from.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, not having that business side of it, if you don't know how to run the books, you don't really know what you're making, right? So a lot of the times, like I said before, too, everything just comes down to price. And that's how a lot of these companies sell. They'll drop their prices when it seems like they're not doing well enough. You know, but if you don't have a sales process too, and that's one thing that Greg taught me, is I was a discounter for sure. Like I needed to get the job. I didn't know what I was doing. And I always just thought everything came down to the numbers, you know, and it doesn't, right? If you're providing a really good service, people are going to see the value in that. But if you don't have the right process and communication skills to convey that to the client, they're not going to see that in you, right? And you could be the most trustworthy guy, the smartest guy, but it doesn't mean anything if you can't communicate it, right? So bringing that side of it, having a good process, and not changing with the wind or the economic, the way that things are economically too. You know, why would you drop your price? Now, what does that do to your service? Well, you're going to lose guys because you're not going to be able to pay them the right job for that, right? And then that's going to bring your service down. So you've really not done the customer a service or your business really.
Now you're heading down to the greater San Marcos, Escondido, San Diego,
yep.
Temecula area.
Yeah.
And California right now, and quite honestly, the West Coast as a whole, isn't feeling the love of prosperity to a certain extent. There's a lot of things that are factoring in it. What do you see as some big challenges down there?
I mean, definitely financially, like you were saying before, you know, gas is $8, right? You're getting close to it at least, you know. That's going to be a challenge for sure. Utilities, I mean, the Pacific Northwest, they have definitely a lower rate on utility cost, you know. So luckily the house we're renting down there has solar, you know. Does that cover everything?
I guess it could work down there.
Yeah.
Any place.
Right. If anywhere, that's where you want solar, right? So luckily
Correct. That
was a prerequisite when we were looking at houses down there. But like Greg said, you know, if it's tough up here, I can't even imagine how it is for companies down there at this point, you know.
You're moving your family down there. That's a big move.
It's a big move.
Yeah, and you just moved from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's quite a bit. How do you balance this out? How are you going to make this work?
Well, so I've actually done this move 3 times. So
charm?
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it now. If you need help moving, call me. You know? Like,
yeah. 1-800-TRAVIS.
Yeah.
Are you excited about it? Is this something? I mean, I don't want to dig too deep here. You know, it's right. Obviously, are you excited about going? It's back home for you.
It is back home. You know, there's an excitement, but there is some love lost with California and the way it is. You know, so you know, if I can make a difference down there, that's great. We have a really great home church. You know, shout out to the Way in Murrieta, family church out there. So we have a really good church community out there. So we are excited about that. I have family out there. We're excited about that as well. Economically, not super excited about that.
you're gonna have to kind of deal with that. And you know, here, you know, north of us in Washington, it's mm-hmm. not exactly super inexpensive to be up there as well. I mean, you know, we're in a spot right now, and it'll be interesting to be able to keep going.
Right.
And that's gonna be the heck of it. We're visiting with Greg Vesely. Former associate pastor at New Hope Foursquare Church. Travis Rabbi, his partner in the HVAC world, if I'm summing it up correctly. And Greg, you can correct me after that as we get back right after the news. And let's hope it's good news.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters of 1430 KYKN.
Jake, Rural Matters. Another glorious Friday in March, and it's a great time to be here. Grateful for KYKN, 1430 KYKN AM. We're in the heart of Salem, which is the capital of Oregon, and we're basically in the heart of the Willamette Valley as you hear my voice. And happy Lent season to everyone that celebrates the birth, the life, crucifixion, and the resurrection of Christ. That's everything to me. And I know it is to the person sitting to my left, and further to my left, Greg Vesely, associate pastor for a while at New Hope, and you've done ministry in Hawaii, and you're still, like, it's like a Marine, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Exactly.
And as a pastor, you know, once a pastor, hopefully always a pastor, and yeah. So forth. Greg, you're, both you and Travis, being in the business world, Washington State just passed a $1 million tax deal. You want to talk about that a little bit? Can you explain that to what it means to people?
Yeah, it's very interesting because as economically things are declining, there's ways that they're trying to pull more money out of people. And this tax that was passed is a income tax. It's supposed to be on millionaires, so households that equal $1 million.
And this
plus.
Is gross. Correct. Not deducted down if you had a business, but gross earnings.
From my understanding, yes, yeah. From what I've read. And one of the things is I'm concerned about is there's a loophole in there that the way it's worded in the documentation and what was approved opens the door where everybody could get a tax. It doesn't matter what your income level is. It really starts to open up the door. And the thing is it's unconstitutional because the Washington Constitution says that there is no state income tax, and it's always been that way. And so they're continually, you know, trying to find ways to pull money, which really affects businesses all over because, you know, owners that own businesses and different things, you know, who knows how long they're going to be able to stay in the state. Because if you're paying high property tax, you're paying sales tax, you're paying federal tax, and then now you're going to pay income tax, that becomes pretty expensive to run business. And all it does is what people don't realize, it brings the cost up of their products to subsidize that. Someone's going to pay for it. You know what I mean? And it's usually the consumer.
Well, what bothers me, and Travis, I want your take on this here in a second. We have these leaders in our states and in our federal government, local governments, but the ones that are full-timers, they're always going to get their check. They're always going to get their cost of living raise.
Right.
Many of them have their basic stuff, very good health insurance programs paid for. What I'm saying is these things don't hit them. They're not going to suffer their edicts on the common citizen. And that is what really, I think, hits home to me. Are we getting bang for our buck with our taxes there, Travis? What do you think when you're looking at your pay stub and you're seeing all that money go to these various things? Talk about that, being in the state of Washington for a couple more days.
Well, ever since I've owned a home in Washington, my property tax goes up every single year, right? And I mean, I don't see much improvement. Things are just getting harder and harder on families, especially, you know, like I said, I have three young daughters. The school systems are suffering, right? So we're about to do homeschooling when we go to California for that purpose. It just seems like everything's falling apart. And, you know, growing up, history was one of my favorite subjects, right? So my grandpa always said he was a Marine. He's like, if you don't look at history, you're doomed to repeat it. And they just did this in California. And what happened? Everyone moves out. You know, there's a mass exodus. I don't understand what they're thinking, to be honest, you know, to see all that.
Well, there's a lot of theories going on what people are thinking or not, and some harsh terms that I'll probably leave off this program, at least for now. Let's talk about, as fellow believers and in this Lenten season, Greg, I'm going to bring this one to you. Opioid use has risen 300% in Seattle, and it spills out. What do you see right now from, let's just go back to when we first met in the new year of 2013. How have you seen things change from going from Salem to Hawaii, Washington, bouncing around California? You get around, Greg, give me a kind of a cliff note of what your thoughts are as Christians and as a pastor.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is in our society as a whole, there's been less hope. And when there's not hope, you know, people go to other things to try to fulfill themselves, as in drugs or whatever it may be. And so the hope is in Christ. And I think with shutting the churches down and all these different things, there's just people that just, and even in the economy, what's going on, I believe the economy will turn around eventually. But with everything that's going on, they have no hope. And the thing is most people put their hope in the wrong things, in government. They put hope in their job. They put everything in these things, and their identity actually becomes part of that. Well, when someone's identity is taken away, right, or destroyed, people have no hope, and they start to seek out other things.
I had you on, I think a little over a year ago. You were doing a men's Bible study in your church, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you about that when we were visiting a couple of weeks ago. How's that going? Is it still going? Maybe it's a better question.
Yeah, so I'm part. I don't lead the Bible study, but I meet with a few guys in the morning, and just, you know, as iron sharpens iron, right? And so 100%. These guys are like-minded, and when we're struggling with something, we have each other to lift each other up. And that's the thing. When I was talking about helping pastors, and even the same thing as believers, we need to have that circle around us where they can speak into our lives. We give them permission to do that, and there's trust there, and they can say the hard things. I think the hard things sometimes need to be said for our own growth and our own purposes. So,
Travis, what are your thoughts on, you know, as you're making a big move, Southern California, and I heard the word homeschooling, and a couple of weeks ago, we had a mom and daughter, 4-H people, they're beautiful, homeschooling. I get homeschoolers on this program. What do you like about it? It's a big commitment.
It's a big commitment for sure. And now what I'll be doing, I'll be working from home. It's a lot of responsibility on my wife, and God bless her. She's got that heart and she's got that will and that drive to do that. I mean, we've always had our daughter's best intentions in mind, but just put it in perspective, we had my oldest daughter's in public school currently, and we had a birthday party for her. She's turning 11. And the things I'm hearing these other girls talk about and TikTok, like there's no phones, like my kids don't have phones, right? But they're doing TikTok dances and they're fighting over boys. And I'm just like, my wife and I look at each other, it's like, yeah, that's not what we want for them, you know?
No.
We want to keep that innocence, you know, keep everything pure for them, and don't want to throw them out into the world, which, you know, I feel like we did a little bit with our oldest, and we want to pull back and take her out of school and just homeschool her.
Yeah, no, there's nothing wrong with that. And you're heading down to California, and particularly there in Temecula, there's good networks down there.
There is.
You can join up with them. They've really taken this whole thing from, say, back when I was in college back in the 80s, and you started hearing, oh, I homeschool, and I thought, man, I feel sorry for these kids.
Right. That's what I thought as a kid, too.
I almost look, I want to say this carefully, you know, there's almost isolated, like, say, the Amish people in Pennsylvania. It's not that way.
No.
And my younger brother homeschooled his kids up until the eighth grade, and it's come a long way. What do you like about it?
Yeah, so we'll be a part of a charter school down there, you know, so they're going to get interaction. And like I said, we have a really good church family down there. So our girls will be around like-minded people, you know, very good influences from what we've seen. So that's what we like about it. And just really having, for lack of a better term, just control over what they're getting exposed to, you know, that would be what I would say.
I think it's wonderful. And you got all your boxes are getting packed, and because I don't think there's anything... short of being very ill, worse than moving. I don't, and especially you got, you know, both of you guys have moved so much, and it's taxing on you. How do you get everybody excited?
Just trying to get myself excited, really, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, and thinking about, like, nothing's going to get fixed when we get there, right? You know, knowing that God has a good plan and a good purpose for us, that's where our hope is, right? Greg was right on the money with that, is hope, right? So, we moved back up here recently and we thought things would go a certain way, and God's like, no, it's not going to go that way for you. I got a better plan. So just having in mind that he's got a better plan for us is where our hope comes from. Really
fantastic. And we do need that in this era that we're in. We're listening to my friend Greg Vesley and his partner Travis Rabbi as they are morphing through the world today in all kinds of directions. Jake, Rural Matters. We're going to be back with the final segment right after this.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, Friday. And wonderful to be here and with my good friend Greg Vesley, who I had years to get to know when he was associate pastor, not far from here at New Hope Four Square. It only seems like yesterday, Greg. And then your partner, Travis Rabbi's with you. In your business adventures, because quite honestly, it is an adventure to be in business. I could speak to that from my old dairy farming days. Greg, you're a busy guy, and you've got an investment and associate home service business consulting. Talk about that, and you've written stuff. So go for it. Take some time.
Yeah. So kind of make this short story, kind of how we came up where we're at now, is I was pastoring for many years, and I've always done business on the side. If you remember when you were on the council, from a lot of it was sales or running my own companies. And the Lord spoke to me a long time ago that I would help take business and ministry and bring it together like it hasn't been seen before. And I never knew what that meant until recently. And so when I moved to Hawaii, I was working for Wyndham Corporation and did very well with Wyndham. I helped transform the way some of their sales process was on the island of Kauai in the timeshare business because I never liked how dishonest it was.
Right.
And I was like, the product could sell itself if you're just honest and transparent. And I did that. I changed the culture there while I was doing some ministry stuff on the island, but I had to make a living to be able to live there.
Sure.
And when COVID hit, I ended up joining into a friend's business, and it was an HVAC. So I learned a lot about HVAC, and I became well-known in the HVAC world because I started doing a lot of business and producing numbers that haven't been seen, really. And then I moved here to help establish their business here. And we helped grow it from 500,000 to 27 million in 5 years. And so, but there was a lot of stuff that I didn't like about it, and some dishonesty and different things that were going on. So the Lord transitioned me out. And actually, Travis and I worked together, really transitioned both of us out, and actually took a huge pay cut compared to what we were making and what we're doing. And the Lord wanted us, we believe, to help businesses scale, but also teach them what it means to be an honest business and kingdom business. So a regular business, maybe a believer owns, it could be a believer that owns a business, versus a business that's designed to fund ministry work, and that's called a kingdom business. And so we help businesses do that, but also those businesses that are not really faith-based, just helping them really grow their business. And so we're a consulting group. And so we help businesses. We look at every aspect. We come alongside them, help them grow, help their sales process, development, all that kind of stuff. And so that's how Vestly International came about. And through that, we've done some writing. I have a book coming out, Proof Before Price. The whole idea is you have to prove the value. And once they see the value, they'll pay the price.
Yeah.
And so...
So, you know, your book's coming out this summer. Did I hear that right?
Yeah. This summer. We were planning on end of spring, but really realistically, it's almost done. It'll probably be more summer.
So when you and I were on council and you did a lot of the budget, you know, you were the budget presenter mainly. And of course, you preached and did men's group. And you you and I get to visit between breaks and everything else, the men's group. Why don't you tell the audience, we've got a few minutes, your history in business. I mean, also, no, business, where did it come from? Where did that come from you? Because you told me, and I think everybody should hear this.
Yeah, so actually my dad was an entrepreneur who I call dad. He's my stepdad, but he's dad. He raised me. And he would have me read books like How to Win Friends and Influence People at 7 years old. And he wasn't really that, I mean, he knew of God, but we weren't, you know, involved in church. But he would take me to all these business meetings and conferences, network marketing. He was involved in network marketing and all that. And so I would go door to door at like 8 years old selling MCI. Remember long distance?
Yeah.
Some of these people probably don't even remember what that is, right?
I do.
long distance providers. And I got like 100 signups in like 2 days at 7 years old or 8 years old. And so that was kind of my adventure, you know, in business and reading and all that. And in high school, I owned two cellular companies in high school. And so what happened?
And these were all in California.
These are all in California.
Yeah.
My dad started the company. And my dad was always one of those guys that nothing's for free. There's a lesson in it. And so one day he came to me, he says, hey, how would you like to be my partner? And I said, I would love it. And then he's like, well, you have to buy out my partner. So I did. I raised all the money at 16 years old, bought out his partner. Then he said, hey, I'm going to go on a different business adventure. I hired an accountant, have fun. And we were doing 200 to 300 activations a month. So it was a real company that had a lot of business going through it. And so that was kind of my start in business at a young age.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that, and I'm like going, oh my gosh, this guy, like, you see these in movies. Yet you also, you got involved in being a pastor.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
So one day, it is short version, is my dad decided to go back to church. He grew up Free Will Baptist, but there was not a lot of free will, and he walked away. And one day he decided, let's go back to church. He invited me to go. He's like, I'm not going to force you, but I'm going to invite you to go. And I remember I walk in this Foursquare church in Auburn, California, Auburn Faith Center. And I walk in. I remember someone walked up and hugged me. And I'm like, who are you? Like, you know. And I remember listening to music, and they had their hands up. And I'm going, what is this? But there was this cute little girl, well, not little at the time, teenager, right?
Yeah.
That was up front that came to me and invited me to youth group. And so that Tuesday, they had Tuesday night youth, I went. And my joke was always, hey, I went to church to pick up on girls. God picked up on me. The girl stayed, and I left with God.
that's an incredible story. And then you talk about where you learned business. Where was your pastoral experiences and training? Where did that come from?
So really, a lot of it was... the lead pastor of a church in Grass Valley brought me on as an intern pastor. And so, you know, I started serving at youth group first and preaching, and they'd invite me, you know, hey, why don't you give the message and that kind of thing. And I just started diving deep in the Bible. And then I decided to take this position, just pretty much volunteer. It was like a stipend. And as an intern pastor, and his name was Pastor Michael Sorrow. And he kind of took me under his wing, and I was doing Bible college at the same time as I was pastoring. So I took my first pastor at 18 and just went from there.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible story. And you haven't looked back since. How much are you doing now? How much pastoring are you able to do as you are? Well, in a way, your business narrative, you know, piggybacks with your faith. Are you doing any preaching now? You have any opportunities, or what are you looking at down the road?
Yeah, so there was a season where I felt like the Lord said, do nothing. because he wanted to teach me some things. And up to a year and a half ago, he kind of released me to be able to start speaking again. And I started doing that like at a men's group and a few things. But really, we've been using the business really to reach people. So I have a client in Idaho, and they're Mormon based. And we were there. It was so cool. We were there, and the family was like, "You guys are different. You know, you guys pray differently." Mm-hmm. And so we were able to take that opportunity to really build a relationship. And through those relationships, God's been doing some pretty cool things, and with even some of our clients.
Yeah, I love hearing this, and you know, it's so good to see you and to meet your partner, Travis. You know, we've got like a minute and some change. Mm-hmm. What's exciting you about heading south? What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the new opportunities that we have down south. You know, Greg's really been kind of using his relationships, not using them, but you know, getting us business through his relationships. And I have quite a few relationships down there, so I'm happy to, like, our heart's to help, right? So if I can help anybody, that's our goal. So whatever I can do to help down south, that's what I'm looking to do.
Yeah, and I suppose if you ever have any kind of tech problem in your house when it comes to heating and air conditioning, man, you've got it. Honestly, man, that is seriously worth some money right there, bud.
Ask my wife how much money I've saved.
How much? tell everybody here in Salem.
Man, I jokingly, but I mean thousands of dollars on having repair people out to my house, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And how much money he saved me.
You're welcome.
Okay, you volunteered that.
That's one thing. If you do know how to fix things, don't tell people. That's one thing.
No, because they'll say, "Hey, I'll take you out for lunch or something." And by the way, I was a little late because I had this HVAC problem.
Yeah.
You can read the tea leaves on that. Yeah. So, but and your family is they're there. They're going to be there for you. It's so important,
right?
You know, with a young family like yourself. And Greg's a bit older, and you don't look it though. You look great.
Thank you.
Yeah, honestly. It's been a pleasure talking to you to have such, you mentioned Hope, Greg, and Travis as well, in a time when there's a lot that's taking out of being, following the American dream. You know, just pull the spiritual out of it, you know, the American dream to have a business, to run a business, and it's getting harder and harder, and to see you guys still soldiering on and being creative, innovative, and knowing how to make things work. Both of you, thanks so much for coming on the program, coming down from Washington State, particularly you, Travis, because you can't let any grass grow under your feet as you're getting ready to head out in a few days. And
thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Greg, Travis, Jake, Rule Matters. Blessed Friday to you, and we'll see you guys next week.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.